I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, mixed emotions as election results come into focus. Plus, Governor Jay Inslee dodges an interview on his missed climate goals. An unbelievable apology from yet another school superintendent.
For those in the Bellevue School District who felt harmed by my letter from last week, I humbly apologize.
And California takes a page out of Seattle's MLB playbook, but hey, at least they were honest about it.
Folks say, oh, they're just cleaning up this place because all those fancy leaders are coming into town. That's true.
That and much more coming up today on Undivided. You can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, happy Monday to all of you. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your help in giving common sense a comeback. I got good news and bad news. Good news and bad news. Nicole, what do you want first? Good news or bad news?
Let's go bad.
Bad news is common sense did not make a comeback.
It did.
In the election last week. Good news? We still have jobs. Because once common sense makes a comeback, we might be unemployed or we might have to change the whole purpose of our show. I do want to start just because we've gotten, I think, some clarity and finality in some of the races that we've been covering and focusing on. So I want to start there. And then we have a jam-packed, truly jam-packed show today on a variety of topics. So let's just go through Seattle really quick. Three incumbents. I said, none of them should keep their seats. None of them deserve to keep their seats. I mean, look at the state of the city. I think if you've been sitting on the Seattle City Council, you're responsible for that. These three incumbents in particular, I think, made some decisions that led to the crime crisis, the drug crisis, et cetera. Unfortunately, two of them are going to keep their jobs, it turns out, because we saw this late surge for more to-the-left candidates. So in District 6, Dan Strauss, it looks like he is going to keep his seat against Pete Hanning, 52% of the vote to 48% of the vote. Again, Dan Strauss wasn't my biggest concern, but he did campaign in 2019 saying, oh, we need to support the police and hire more officers. Then he turned around and supported police defunding. All right, District 2, Tammy Morales. So this is South Seattle, Chinatown International District. Unfortunately, Tammy Morales, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, is going to keep her seat. I know that they're not separated by much. I believe Tanya Wu's campaign is out there doing some ballot curing and hoping to close the gap, but I think that's probably pretty unlikely. So Tammy Morales. Now, good news, Andrew Lewis did not see that late swing go far enough for him in downtown. That was the key one. Of all the people that I wanted to see not win, Andrew Lewis was at the very, very top of the list. So he's wound up with 49%, and he's certainly closed it a little bit, 49% to 51%. So fare thee well, flip-flopper, fare thee well. Because Andrew Lewis was the king of I'll say the prince. Yeah, I don't know. He's a little young.
Yeah, I don't get him a king title.
The prince of flip-floppers. So I think that's very good. So there were certainly some highlights from last week's election. There were some lowlights as well. I'll get to a few of those momentarily, but I will say Andrew Lewis put out a statement conceding the race. He said, I just called Kettle for Seattle to congratulate him on a hard-fought win and pledged my full support for his transition to the city council. Thank you to everyone who has supported me in this journey. I don't think he's talking to me there. I'm proud of what we've accomplished and look forward to the next chapter. Yeah, I don't know how you can be proud of what you've accomplished because your district downtown Seattle is far worse off than it was when you took office. And that's saying a lot because it was already pretty bad in 2019. So I think Andrew Lewis, and I'm trying not to make it personal, but you know, You made it personal when you decided that it was more important to please activists than it was to support the men and women of law enforcement in your city who were doing a very difficult job under difficult circumstances. You made it personal when you, at the last minute, killed a common sense drug ordinance that would have actually saved lives, stopped people from dying on the sidewalks of your district. So I'm happy to see Andrew Lewis isn't going to keep his job. And I will say overall, although there are a couple incumbents who are keeping their jobs, overall, the overall makeup of the Seattle City Council will be better. And that's a good thing. I think there is at least five common sense votes to either pass legislation that needs to be passed or perhaps more importantly, kill legislation that's proposed by people like Tammy Morales. So it is going to be better. Baby steps. Tiny little baby steps. Now, I will say overall across the state, another bad election for Republicans. Another really bad election for Republicans. And I say that because, you know, in Spokane, for instance, the mayor's race, Spokane and Eastern Washington, I mean, that has been sort of the Republican stronghold. And when you look at, and I know that Spokane is getting more and more blue, but at the same time, you know, to see not only a Democrat win the mayor's race in Spokane, but a Democrat who was so problematic, who had so many things in her background while she worked as the head of commerce under Jay Inslee that were really questionable. You know, how commerce handled, for instance, the clearing of homeless encampments, how commerce was handling the doling out of money that came in during COVID and giving them to all these, you know, I would say politically and socially inclined organizations that matched up with their worldview. So anyway, Lisa Brown is going to be the new mayor of Spokane. Nadine Woodward, former TV anchor who'd been the mayor there, trailing 48% of the vote to 52% of the vote. That's a huge loss for Republicans. That is a huge loss for Republicans. And I'll say, you know, Nadine had some self-inflicted wounds, certainly. And I do think as well that there were some further to the right Republicans who probably did not support her campaign. And so that might have been problematic as well. But the other thing, and I'll get to the Snohomish County Sheriff's race, which I think was such a missed opportunity for the state Republican Party, was such a failure for them not to do more in that race. But I'll say, oh my gosh, talking about common sense not making a comeback, Nicole sent me this screenshot yesterday. It was like, ruined my day, of the updated election results in Tacoma for Measure One. So this has to do with landlord-tenant protections. And it gives these incredibly strict restrictions on landlords, but these immense protections for tenants that in some cases go even further than what the city of Seattle has done. You know, it bans evictions in not only cold weather months, but during the school year, if there's children in the home, even if someone is not paying rent for the entirety of that time. If you're a tenant and your landlord increases your rent by more than 5% and you can't afford it, your landlord has to help you with 2 months of expenses to move somewhere else. I mean, this is, you know, for as much as Democrats, and again, I just talk about common sense, as much as they talk about the affordable housing crisis, what do you think this is going to do for the affordable housing crisis? The small landlords are going to flee, just as they've been fleeing the city of Seattle over things like this. And then what are you going to be left with? And so it's like what they say they value, what they say they want, versus what they do. And this is really about, and I'm of course, they're a bad landlords. I think we've all, anybody who's been a renter in their life has experienced a bad landlord. But I think that's the exception, not the rule. There should be reasonable protections in place for tenants. I don't think anybody wants a family with kids going to school thrown out on the streets in the middle of winter. I don't think landlords want to do that either. But you have to be reasonable. And Measure One is not reasonable. It's really unfortunate to see that prevailing in the city of Tacoma. All right. Now I want to talk about the Snohomish County Sheriff's race, because I think there are so many larger lessons to take away from this. And also, you know, I think bigger themes here than just this one race about the politics of personal destruction, about how, you know, that has seeped its way into all these races, including a race that really should have been about public safety. I mean, there's no room for the politics of personal destruction when we look at our public safety crisis, which is life or death. As you know by now, Sheriff Adam Fortney, who I endorsed, one of only two political candidates in my life I've ever endorsed, lost the race to Susanna Johnson. It's down 48% to 52% at the latest ballot count. And he was subjected to endless, vitriolic, unfair, untrue character assassinations for the entirety of this race. And some of it, a lot of it, came from the Washington State Democratic Party. You know, this is a nonpartisan race. Of course, we all know that, you know, a race can be nonpartisan. It doesn't mean the people running are nonpartisan. It just means the race is nonpartisan. But I'll say Democrats have done a much better job at getting involved in those sorts of races, even though somebody's not a Democrat on the ballot. And that's what they did here. And they vilified Adam Fortney. You know, they labeled him as a white supremacist, racist, you know, in bed with the constitutional sheriff's movement. And none of it, none of that criticism was about what he's actually done for public safety. You know, they focused on decisions, hiring and firing decisions that he made years ago that were, you know, one of them that he was criticized for was actually held up and he was proven to be correct, but nobody talked about that. Nobody covered that. It was all about character assassination. And I would have liked to see the state Republican Party get more involved in helping Adam Fortney keep his seat. I think Democrats did a much better job in that race, and I think that's why you're seeing the result here. I mean, man, I regret, I will say personally, I regret not getting involved in this race sooner to try to sort of do what we could. And that's not to say it would have made a difference in thousands of votes. You know, we went and held a sign waving for an event for him a week before. But, you know, some of what he was subjected to in the personal character assassination, that's the kind of stuff that we have to push back against, regardless of what your political ideology is. If you care about public safety, if you're opposed to the politics of personal destruction, you should be willing to speak out about it, no matter if it's against a candidate you support or not. And Adam Fortney released this really lengthy statement on Facebook. And I'm not going to read it all because it's very, very long. I would encourage you to go to his campaign or his Sheriff Adam Fortney Facebook page and read the entire thing. But I want to read a good chunk of it because what he's saying speaks to so much of what we are fighting against on this show. So, of course, he, you know, talks about being disappointed in the results. He said, "I believe I've remained authentic to who I am as a person, and I carried that with me to the office of sheriff. I did not change who I am as a person due to changing political winds or tides. This is not always advantageous politically, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I thought I learned a lot about people in the 27 years of working on the streets of Snohomish County, but I think I probably learned more in the last 4 years than ever, and not all of it was good. I chose not to participate in the politics of personal destruction, and I stand by it." He says, "The saddest thing to me about this entire year is that my opponent won this race by convincing enough of our public that I am a racist. And she even got the head of the state Democratic Party to call me a white supremacist, yet she's never met me or been in a room with me. This is the part of politics I can't stand and will not miss. If you have to win a local race for sheriff by painting a U.S. Navy veteran and 27-year member of the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office with an impeccable record as somehow being a racist, and you are comfortable telling voters this story, I think this reflects more on my opponent than me. It is unfortunate to me that there are people in this world like my opponent where a political seat is worth publicly trashing another human being with these character defamations. It worked, so unfortunately this cycle will continue in politics." And it did work, because if this was a race that was on the merits and was looking at what Adam Fortney has done for public safety in Snohomish County, then he would have won. But this was a race, like all races, that looks at, you know, how someone is painted politically on the left or the right. And this one in particular was the old tried and true Democratic playbook, the playbook they've been turning to ever since Donald Trump, you know, tore onto the political scene, and that is trying to paint every single Republican, conservative, as a right-wing racist extremist. And it's going to continue to work as long as voters continue to allow it to work. And I've never met the sheriff-elect Johnson before. I've never met her. And she might be a perfectly pleasant person. But based on how she ran her campaign, I have a hard time believing that. And as he said there, he's a Navy veteran. He spent 27 years in law enforcement. How could you, as a fellow member of law enforcement, vilify someone to that degree without any evidence, without any merit? I mean, when they call him racist and a white supremacist, what are you pointing to? They've pointed to nothing. They've pointed to no example of anything he's said or done that would suggest he's a racist, that would suggest he's a white supremacist. And so that's deeply concerning to me, that someone who's running a nonpartisan race would say those things, would push those things, or would allow other people to push those things. I would have had a lot more respect for Susanna Johnson if she had come forward and said, "Hey, you know, the state Democratic Party is calling him a white supremacist. I don't think that's right. He's a veteran of the sheriff's office. He's a member of law enforcement, and I'm not going to allow him to be painted in that way." But she didn't do that. So is she going to stand up for the other men and women in her department who she's now going to be in charge of? I tend to doubt it. And that doesn't bode well for how she's going to run the sheriff's office or for public safety. And so I feel for Adam Fortney. And I'll say, Nicole and I were at an event. I hosted the Snohomish County Canine Foundation dinner and auction over the weekend. And Sheriff Fortney was there because he's on the board of that particular foundation. And he took the stage to just a rousing standing ovation. But did he Nicole, even in that entire speech, did he use that opportunity to say anything negative about his opponent?
Oh, no.
Nothing.
Nothing.
In fact, he said, you know what? The sheriff's department's going to be okay.
Yeah, he said, We'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. And then he moved on and he talked about the reason they were there. He talked about the wonderful work that the men and women of his department are doing, that that particular foundation is doing. That's the kind of person Adam Fortney is. I think given everything that he has personally endured, and if you read the messages on his Facebook page from absolute ideologues, you would understand this. I think for him to get up there and to, you know, be the bigger person shows who he is. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have to ask ourselves, and I might be belaboring this, but I think we all have to ask ourselves, what kind of campaigns are we going to support? What kind of politicians are we going to support? And what kind of politics are we going to support? And I'll tell you what, if you have someone who I disagree with on policy positions, but who is running a campaign that has moral clarity, that isn't engaged in the politics of personal destruction, and they're running against someone who's doing the exact opposite, who I might agree with more on policy issues, I'm done. I'm done supporting those individuals. I honestly value personal character and morality at this point almost more than I value your, I think more than I value your policy positions. Because I can find a lot of people who I share policy positions with, but not all of them are going to have a moral compass. Not all of them are going to treat human beings as human beings, regardless of their ideology. And so more and more, that's what I tend toward. Like, I genuinely don't care as much about what kind of policies you're going to support. Obviously, there are some extreme examples where that might not be the case. But this is a sheriff, this sheriff-elect Johnson, who I don't think I will ever be able to support or laud or credit, given what she allowed to happen over the past year and given the way in which she chose to run and to win this race. So just something to think about. All right, moving on from election stuff. But again, we have the job still, I guess. Hey, look, I'd love to be out of a job.
Oh my goodness.
I would love in 2024 for common sense just to sweep across the land and then to focus on other things. I don't think that's gonna happen, but. All right, there was a story that happened last week that just underscores, you know, the real insanity of the cyclical nature of our criminal justice system and the need for accountability. I mean, it shouldn't be controversial to call for or want accountability for criminals and to believe that accountability is a path toward reducing recidivism. If you got two criminals and one of them has had to pay the piper for what they've done and the other one just keeps getting out and doing things and getting out and doing things, which one do you think is less likely to reoffend? I mean, that's common sense stuff. So anyway, there was this crash that the story just keeps getting wilder and wilder the more we hear about it. I mean, the crash itself was crazy. So you might have heard about it. It was in Seattle and involved a King County Metro bus, and it was sort of a chain reaction crash, and it sent the bus careening into a building. So that's crazy in and of itself. But then when information came out about the man accused of causing the crash, then it just takes on a whole nother level. So his name is Adam Abelson. He's now facing charges of vehicular homicide, reckless driving, because the bus hit a woman on the sidewalk and killed her, which is so sad. And then it went into the building. Mm-hmm. Adam Abelson now facing charges of vehicular homicide, reckless driving, and having no valid operator's license, so no driver's license. So according to Fox 13, their headline, man accused of causing fatal chain reaction bus crash in Seattle had 50 past warrants issued for his arrest. Prosecutors say that locally, he's been issued around 50 warrants for his arrest in the past and accused of numerous crimes. Charging documents state that Abelson not only caused the crash with the bus in Seattle, but was also accused of having drug paraphernalia on the front seat of his car at the time. Shock of the century. Charge documents say he was also speeding at highway speeds, much faster than the 25-mile-per-hour posted speed limit where the crash occurred. He was also accused of failing to slow down or stop for a solid red light. And his criminal history includes hit and run, wow, shock, vehicle prowling, making false statements to a public servant, theft, and organized retail theft. So here you have a guy who has, I mean, are they the crimes of the century? No. But these are the kinds of crimes, some of these crimes are ones that like Lisa Herbold on the Seattle City Council wanted to like deem crimes of poverty. And now you know why that's so silly, to suggest that someone who's, oh, it's just a vehicle prowl. It's just theft. They're just stealing something from Target. No, that all is tied to a greater issue, substance abuse, which is tied to other crimes, to feed a drug habit, etc. So it's just silly you know, to look at some of these lower level crimes and to convince yourself or try to convince people that the only thing contributing them to them is poverty and that the person isn't capable of doing anything worse. So anyway, here you have a guy, criminal history, using drugs, has had 50 warrants locally out for his arrest. And now he's killed someone. And this is the obvious result. You have people who are going to cycle in and out of the criminal justice system with no accountability until they do something so horrific, like take a human life, that they then will end up in prison for. And you have done nothing meaningful in their past 50 arrests to try to change the course of their lives. And that, to me, makes the government and lawmakers and people who have crafted these policies that are soft on crime culpable for the deaths, the likely deaths that will result. You know, like in lawmakers in Olympia, when they made it nearly impossible for police to pursue even violent individuals on the roadways. And you've had instances where those individuals who fled from law enforcement, fled from a traffic stop, went on to kill someone. To me, that makes lawmakers who supported that policy culpable in those homicides, in those murders. But they just refuse to take any level of responsibility, and they treat those as one-offs when they're not one-offs. We talk about stories like this all the time, and I do not know what it is going to take to get this into the brain of policymakers. That, of course, someone who's committed north of 50 criminal violations, who's had north of 50 warrants out for their arrest, of course that person is a danger to the community. I don't care if all 50 of the warrants had to do with stealing something from Target. This is someone who has shown that they're not willing to live within the parameters of a civil society that we have laid out. And at what point do you realize and recognize that something has to be done with that person to protect the rest of us from them? And I don't know if it's going to take, you know, and I don't want to politicize a woman's death, but it's going to take lawsuits, I think. It's going to take lawsuits from families of people who have been killed as a direct result of the negligence of policymakers in coddling criminals. I think that's all it's going to take, is you sue them blind. And I know that's suing taxpayers blind, but I just don't know what the genesis is going to be for change. All right. Governor Jay Inslee, another good King 5, a report from the King 5 investigators. See, I'm capable of giving King 5 credit where credit is due. I think the investigators do a good job. Governor Jay Inslee makes himself out to be the climate governor, the climate presidential candidate. He's going to be down in San Francisco this week talking about the climate. But at the same time, the state of Washington is missing nearly all its climate goals and refuses to talk to King 5 about it. We'll get to that coming up next. But first, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And look, there's never going to be a good time to start a weight loss program. I mean, you know, you're in the summer, he's like, oh, I've got vacations. This time of year, it's like, well, the holidays are coming up, Thanksgiving and Christmas. There is never going to be an ideal time to start a new weight loss program. I started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program November 1st of last year. And I did it knowing that the holidays were ahead, that I was going to have a lot of challenges when it came to really sticking to the program. But the results were so good, I will tell you, it was worth it. And when I look back at that period, I don't think about, oh, well, I had to eat less on Thanksgiving. No, I think about how good I felt, how good I look. I lost almost 30 pounds in just the first 2 months. I'm down 37 pounds total. So if you're looking for some perfect time to start a new weight loss journey, there's never going to be one. So start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Not every weight loss program works for every person, so make sure that you talk to him about what it entails. Ask any questions that you have of him and his team. The consultation is free. You can do it virtually. You can do the entire program virtually from anywhere. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action by signing up for their newsletter at future42.org. Governor Jay Inslee believes he is a climate god, that it is his sole purpose on this planet to save it, to save the environment, to improve climate outcomes. At least that's what he wants us to think. And at least that's what he puts forth. And look, I think if you have a governor who's passionate about one particular issue and he is putting forth ideas that are truly going to make a difference, I mean, we all care about the planet, right? I care about the planet. I care about the climate. If there are reasonable things that the government wants to do, although I think the government should utilize the private sector more in trying to make a difference on some of these issues, that's fine. I mean, climate to me is not a controversial agenda. It's really not. But the issue is, are the things you're putting forth working? And are they doing more good than bad? And I think that's questionable on both fronts for the things that Governor Jay Inslee has set forth. So the King 5 investigators, they've been working on this in-depth investigation about the state of Washington missing some of its key climate goals. And at the same time, trying to hide the fact that these climate goals aren't being achieved from the public. This is the story from Susanna Frame, King 5 investigator. Washington missing key climate goals. Advocates claim state leaders lack transparency. And what she points out in this piece is that Washington state has fallen short of some of its most high-profile climate goals that Governor Jay Inslee has set. For instance, over the last 12 years, which Governor Jay Inslee has been in office that entire time, the state is recycling less, not more. Greenhouse gas emissions from transportation are up, not down. Carbon emissions are up despite a state law requiring a reduction. In 2021, Inslee made this big deal on the world stage about signing an executive order mandating that 100% of state-owned vehicles would be electric by 2035. Well, even the state now acknowledges that they're probably not going to hit that mark by 2035. So you've seen all these goals and Inslee, you know, talk about being the climate governor and his climate agenda. But do you ever hear him talk about the fact that so many of those goals have not been met, or so many of these issues when it comes to emissions, for instance, are actually getting worse, not better? Now, there's another aspect to this story that to me is a little more nefarious, because when Inslee first came into office, again, more than a decade ago, so he ordered the creation of something called Results Washington. So he said, this is going to be an accountability tool. It's going to publicly track some of our state goals, including goals around environmental targets. And he said it would be holding themselves accountable. And he was really proud of that. Like, hey, we're going to have this website, Results Washington. When we set goals around the environment or other issues, it's going to track it. It's going to report on that. So everyone in the public knows how we're doing. And at the time, that sounded like a really great thing. Like, wow, this new governor really wants to be held accountable for the outcomes. Except according to Susanna Frame and King 5, that over time, this Results Washington website and the state agency that runs it has scrubbed most of the state's environmental goals and measurements. And when the King 5 investigators reached out to them and asked, well, why have some of these goals been taken off? This is what the Results Washington director told King 5. He said, we did not remove any metrics due to performance issues, but evaluated how to best share the metrics and associated targets for climate-related goals without causing any confusion. Does that sound familiar to you? Does that line sound familiar to you? Because remember when Governor Jay Inslee's carbon tax increased prices for Puget Sound Energy customers, and the Attorney General's office advised the State Utilities and Transportation Commission not to put that increase as a line item on Puget Sound energy bills. Remember the reason they gave? The Attorney General's office said it might be confusing to people, as if we can't understand these things. So now Results Washington telling King 5 that this website, the sole purpose of which Governor Jay Inslee said himself, was to track outcomes, was to publicize goals that they set, and then to report on how those goals were doing. And then they go in over time and they scrub these environmental goals. And you're telling us you've done that to save us the confusion. Does anybody really believe that? And now there's another layer to this, yet another layer to this King 5 report. And that is that Susanna Frame is having a heck of a time getting Governor Jay Inslee to do an interview with her to talk about all of this.
So we caught up with the governor at a public event in October.
Sir, I've been trying to organize an interview with you to talk about our, just a quick one, about our state's climate policies and our targets. And as you know, most of them haven't been met. And so I'm just curious, but I've tried and I've been told no.
Can we get an interview with her? She wants to talk about the climate policy.
Okay.
Can we arrange that? Yeah, let's do that. So we sit down and have
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that would be great, Governor.
Thank you.
Despite that commitment for an interview, it didn't happen. Inslee's office said he was too busy and that King 5 was off the mark by not focusing on the governor's climate policy wins.
So here you have the governor. Oh yeah, we'll do that. Let's set it up. Reach out to the office. Yeah, he's too busy. And by the way, Susanna Frame, longtime veteran journalist, you're off the mark because you as a journalist, a member of the Fourth Estate that exists to hold powerful people accountable, you're off the mark because you're not focusing on the positive. You're focusing on the negative. I hate to break it to you, Governor Jay Inslee's office, but it's not our job to focus on the positive. It's not our job to focus on and to celebrate you setting a goal and meeting it. It's our job to look for ways. It truly is. It is not our job to be your cheerleader. It's our job to hold you accountable. And so if you think, Mike Falk with the governor's office communications team, that someone like Susanna Frey, who's one of the best investigative reporters in the country, that her time is well spent giving the governor praise for meeting goals as opposed to investigating a lack of transparency, investigating missed goals, holding the government accountable, then I'm sorry, but you need to get a new job because you don't understand then the role of the press. And I'll also note that, you know, they're talking about, oh, Governor Jay Inslee doesn't have time. Well, he's traveling all across the world talking to anyone who will listen about his climate successes. He's clearly willing to make time and clearly has time to talk about his climate agenda, but he doesn't have time, fresh out of time, to sit down and talk about criticism of his climate agenda. He's going to be in California on Thursday giving keynote remarks at the U.S.-China Climate Forum at UC Berkeley. And I couldn't help but notice that when the governor's staff sent out his itinerary for the week, they included that, but put a little note behind it saying, this is just an FYI, as in the press isn't invited. The press isn't invited to attend. So what does this say? Again, you have a governor who really has made the entirety of not only his three terms in office, but also his short-lived presidential campaign about the climate and about pushing to improve the climate and fight climate change. But he's not willing, and he's willing, by the way, to push policy like the carbon tax that has made life pretty difficult for working-class Washingtonians. And what did he do when it came to the carbon program? For a year, he lied about what the implications would be. And I said all along, if the governor were willing to be honest about the implications of the carbon program and tell people like, hey, yeah, it's going to raise prices at the pump, but I believe it's the right thing to do for the environment, I would have had more respect for him. But he lied about it to people who are now struggling to fill up their tank to get to work, to pick their kids up from school. And so he's willing to parade across the country, across the world, to put forth this image of being this climate maven, but he's not willing to own up to the shortfalls, where his office and he has fallen short of some of these goals, and to talk about it. I mean, that should really set off alarm bells, even for people who climate change is a key issue for. If you vote and climate change is an issue and what elected leaders are going to do about climate change is an issue that really makes or breaks your vote, think about that. Is it admirable for someone just to talk about climate change and climate issues? Or is it more admirable for them to put forth policy that is actually making a difference and for them to be accountable to the goals that they've set for themselves? All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. We have a trifecta of unbelievable segments. Yes, not one, not two, 3 coming up next. But first, if you're in the market for new insurance, maybe your insurance rates have gone up dramatically. You know, this is an interesting time in the insurance market. You have people who are filing more claims than ever, certainly after the pandemic. And so it can be harder to get insurance right now, or it can be more expensive to get insurance right now. So it really pays to have someone working for you, not for the insurance companies. That's what Mike and I found with First Mark Insurance. We took the First Mark Challenge back in the spring. We came to them, did a little virtual meeting, explained some of our insurance needs. They went out, they shopped the market for us for free. You never pay First Mark a dime to do all this work for you. They came back, gave us their recommendations. Mike and I got much better insurance for the same price. So it was really a no-brainer. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, which again is a locally owned and operated company, he says that price is important, certainly. Everyone's looking at their pocketbooks right now, but they bring a lot more to the table as well.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate. And it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah, and I think that time investment that you make in doing the First Mark Challenge is a good reflection of the quality of the service that you're getting. It's not some little form you fill out online. It's not calling some national chain and sitting on a phone tree and, oh, what's the cheapest option? You're really going to get not only quality service, but also you're going to get an explanation of what you need, more importantly, what you don't need, and you're going to have someone walk you through the process the entire way. So it's worth the time investment, I will tell you, on the front end. So if you haven't done it already, make time to do the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, a trifecta of unbelievable stories, all centering around the conflict in the Middle East and how it is being discussed here locally. So let's get to edition number one of Unbelievable for the day. We broke a story last week about the superintendent of the Bainbridge Island School District, who came out, I think, under pressure from us, probably, and condemned the terror attack in Israel on October 9th, so 2 days after the attack happened, sent out an email condemning it. And then he came out November 8th and apologized for condemning a terror attack, suggesting that it made members of the Muslim community in Bainbridge Island feel insignificant and undervalued. To which I said on the show last week, are you suggesting that all Muslims are Hamas? Like, that actually seems more offensive to me. But there are now two superintendents for local school districts who have engaged in this kind of odd apology. So the superintendent of the Bellevue School District, he had sent out a letter very similar to what happened on Bainbridge and condemned and talked about the you know, tragic loss of life. He said in this letter, there are no easy words to express our deep sadness and heartbreak over the lives lost in the attack on Israel over the weekend and the continued violence and terror still being endured now and in the foreseeable future. As much as we are all impacted to some degree by any violence that happens here around the world, I know that there are children and families in our BSD community who are personally and deeply suffering and traumatized by these recent events. That seems very reasonable. If you're going to take a position on something, taking a position on a terror attack where innocent people were killed and raped and kidnapped seems to be very reasonable and non-controversial, except this superintendent is now apparently also being guilted into apologizing for that reasonable, rational position.
For those in the Bellevue School District who felt harmed by my letter from last week, I humbly apologize. Recognizing the pain and suffering of one community was not intended to diminish the pain and suffering of another community. And yet for some, that was the impact.
But for some, for who? For one person? Did you get one angry email about that? And I'll say, if you want to put out some sort of statement on also what's happening in Gaza, can't you do that without negating or apologizing for a simple expression of sadness over the lives lost in Israel? Why does one have to cancel the other out? And why is all of a sudden this happening? You've had these two superintendents now who, for letters they sent a month ago, are being guilted into apologizing for it. And worse yet, they're giving in. I'm sure there are a lot of superintendents who felt guilted into apologizing for things, but told people to kick rocks. This is beyond, think about this. Apologizing for expressing sadness over a terror attack. What is going on? That is beyond bizarre to me. I made it the subject of our daily subscriber poll question today. I asked folks on Patreon and locals, I said, a second public school superintendent in Washington has issued an apology for condemning the October 7 terror attack on Israel. Should public school administrators avoid making statements on world events altogether? Now, I will say the results so far, and again, these polls continue to be open on Patreon or locals, most people are saying yes. And it kind of goes in line with what we've been saying on the show, which is, look, just stay out of politics and social issues or world events or anything not tied directly to running a school or to a child's education. Right now, 88% of people are saying yes, public school administrators should avoid making statements on world events altogether. Although I voted, and yes, I vote on my own polls. hey, you know, can I do that? Yeah, I voted my own polls. It's just one vote. I voted no, only because I think that there are some world events that rise to the level where, yeah, it is going to impact your school community, either staff members or students. And I think if you set, you know, a line to say, okay, we're never commenting on world events, it's like, well, what if there is, I don't know, what if we're in the middle of World War III or something like that? And it's like, are you really going to set a precedent that you can't respond to any world events? I just think it comes in with, what is your capacity to decide which world events to weigh in on? And then are you willing to stand by reasonable positions like this one, like condemning a terror attack? So let's see some comments here. Dave said, administrators are not teachers. Their role is inward-facing, not public-facing, except when being held accountable to the public that elects them. Thomas said, schools need to stick to the basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic, whatever happened to that. Also, for the love of all that is holy, teach them real math for F's sake, not this BS core crap, just saying. That's funny. Mike, just teach. Maybe if they're worried about the quality of instruction more than politics, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in now with public instruction. I'll read a couple more. Jeremy says, I said yes, but it all depends on circumstances and how it's addressed. And that's what I tend to go with is I think it depends. I think there may be times where it's appropriate for a school district to take a position or to release some sort of statement about something that's happening nationally or in the world. But if you're not capable of doing that, without giving in to whatever unreasonable pushback there might be over that position, then don't do it at all. And that was my message last week to the Bainbridge Island superintendent, which is because he's, you know, flip-flopped on a bunch of issues like this. And, you know, he's commented on other political issues. It's like, if you can't stand by it, then don't do it. If you can't take the heat, like, get out of the kitchen. I don't understand why you're so eager to put yourself out there on something that might come back to bite you. No matter what, you're going to offend somebody in today's climate, especially in the Seattle area. You're going to offend somebody. People are so freaking easily offended here, and they think everything is a personal attack on them. But also, who would be offended by condemning a terror attack? Who would be offended by that? The only people who would be offended by that are Hamas, right?
Well,
the only reasonable people.
Yes, reasonable.
Because you're not condemning Muslims.
Right.
You're not condemning Palestinians. You're not even condemning people who might believe that there needs to be a better solution for Palestinians, or who believe that there should be a ceasefire. You're not even condemning people who believe that Israel should, you know, back off and shouldn't have defended himself. You're not even condemning that. You're condemning the murder and the rape and the beheading and the kidnapping. So I don't understand why people would be offended by that. That's very concerning to me. And in fact, as a superintendent, you should be more concerned that there are people who are offended by that. And you should be like, are these people a danger if they're offended by me condemning a terror attack? Very, very strange
stuff.
There should
be more people offended by the apology.
I'm
speaking up, I guess.
I'm very offended by the, I mean, I'm not offended. Mm-hmm. I'm just weirded out. apologizing saddened. For condemning a terror attack is very weird. I want to read a couple comments on this from locals. Poder says, I'm torn on this one, Brandy. I want them to be able to speak openly and provide thoughtful comments, but when they cave to extremists and apologize, it empowers the vocal minority and looks poorly on our educators and school system. I could not agree more. Shaps says, all evil needs is for good people to do nothing, or at least keep their mouths shut. Should they have not condemned 9/11, the Holocaust, the internment of U.S. citizens who were Japanese descent? Exactly. I think there are a lot of, that's why I say you should be able to reasonably speak out about issues like this without feeling or allowing yourself to feel so guilted that you have to apologize. That to me says a lot about you as a leader. That to me says you're probably not equipped to lead a school district. If you feel so guilted into apologizing for condemning a terror attack, you should probably find a different job. All right, let's keep going on this track, shall we? Another edition of Unbelievable. Boop. All right, the mayor of Redmond has found herself in the spotlight for something that her daughter did down in California. Now, I should be clear that this happened at a college campus. If it was just the daughter of a politician who was a student somewhere, I might feel a little differently about using their face or their name, but her daughter is actually a TA. So her daughter is in charge of like helping to teach the next generation. So that's why I feel okay naming her and putting her face out there. So there was a video that surfaced and people didn't know who it was in the video initially, and it was going all over social media, and then come to find out that this young girl, Rachel Burney, in the video is actually the daughter of Redmond's mayor. So let's play the video.
Why are you taking those down? Why are you laughing? That's not funny.
Tearing down and giggling.
It's not a genocide. They're kidnapped individuals.
So at first it was like, oh, another example of some crazy, crazy leftist tearing down these missing person flyers of people who were kidnapped by Hamas, many of them who, were actually killed and hadn't been located yet. So anyway, that video is going viral. And then our friend Ari Hoffman at KVI, also writes for the Post Millennial, finds out that that is not only a teacher's aide, but her mom is Angela Burney, who's the Democratic mayor of Redmond. So Ari Hoffman exposes that on social media because he's been on sort of this crusade to expose anti-Semitism. And immediately he pointed out that the mayor of Redmond shut down her social media. So made all of her accounts private, presumably because this had now come to recognition that this was her daughter in this video giggling and tearing down pictures and flyers of people who were kidnapped in Israel. Ari writes for the Post Millennial, in response to the backlash over her daughter's actions, Burney shut down her social media accounts and campaign website and issued a brief statement to the Ari Hoffman Show on 570 KVI. Quote, concerns have been raised about my and my family's values regarding anti-Semitism. As a family, we support people from all backgrounds and cultures. People, sure doesn't seem like it. People come to Redmond from all over the world, and I want to assure them that no matter their background, Redmond will always be a safe and supportive home for all. So you're saying, as a family, we support people from all backgrounds and cultures. Square that with what your daughter is doing. Square that with what your daughter is doing, who's a USC physics TA. Are those the actions of someone who was raised to support people from all backgrounds and cultures? Now, I'm not saying that Angela Burney is responsible for everything that her children might do. I don't believe in that. I don't believe that if you're a public figure, that you have to be somehow held accountable for every single thing anyone in your orbit might do. In fact, I'm actually vehemently opposed to that mindset. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to be a news story, right, and that people aren't going to talk about it. But I think the only appropriate response from Mayor Angela Burney in Redmond was to, if she really says and really believes that Redmond is a safe and supportive home for all, that everyone in her family supports people from all backgrounds and cultures, that she wants to assure people that no matter their background, they're going to be safe in Redmond, the only appropriate response is to condemn what her daughter was doing. Right? I mean, unless she doesn't condemn it, Because that statement is a nothing statement, and it's in direct conflict with what is seen in the video. So you can't, on one hand, say, my family supports people from all different backgrounds and cultures, and I want people to assure that, you know, if you're Jewish, for instance, that you feel safe in Redmond. You can't do that and then simultaneously say nothing about what your daughter's doing in that video. So yeah, that in that case, that does reflect on you. So just wild. And the fact that her automatic response would be to lock up her social media. You're a public figure. This stuff is going to happen and you're going to be criticized for things. And your response is to lock down your social media because you don't want to hear the criticism. What, you don't want to read the comments of people criticizing what happened? You don't want to respond to your constituents who might be concerned by it? Unbelievable stuff. Speaking of unbelievable, one more for you today. Boop. Speaking of entities that just need to stay out of it. If you, first of all, I do agree by and large, political issues, social issues, etc., they have no place in public schools. Now, I think there is some overlap. You can't keep every single thing that happens in the big wide world out of classrooms. Kids are going to talk about it. Teachers are going to be talking about it, etc. But I think it's this balance of, do you have to talk about it? Do you need to talk about it? Or are you inserting it when you don't need to be? And this is from Como News. Seattle teachers consider call for a ceasefire in Gaza at next union meeting. For why? It's like Shama Sawant last week, who introduced a resolution at Seattle City Council to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. I will promise you, no one in Israel and no one in Gaza and no one else in the world cares what the Seattle City Council thinks should happen or what the Seattle Teachers Union thinks should happen. It's insane to me that given all the educational issues that we are having in this state, given how much kids are trying to catch up from being behind during the pandemic, given all the other pressures on the lives of school-aged children, that the Seattle Teachers Union would be focused on putting forth a resolution to call for a ceasefire in Gaza at their next union meeting. It's ridiculous. These are the people who are in charge of a child's education. If that's not a poster, a billboard for homeschooling, I don't know what else is. All right, coming up next, Gavin Newsom in California took a page right out of Seattle's MLB playbook, cleaning things up before the Apex conference this week. Except Gavin Newsom, with maybe my favorite soundbite so far of the year, is actually honest about it. We'll talk about that in a moment when we dip outside Washington State. We're going to have a long show today, Nicole. We knew it. We got a jam-packed show today. But first, if you are just starting to plan for retirement or you are getting close to retirement, it is critical in today's economy that you are protecting your retirement portfolio against risk. I mean, we work hard. Every single dime that you put into to go toward your retirement, you work hard for all of it, and you want to make sure it's protected, particularly in today's economy. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital says, more than ever, risk management right now is critical.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
So I think that's the question to be asking yourself right now. Is my portfolio protected against risk, particularly heading into next year? A really good way to find out and perhaps get some free advice and hear what Zach Abraham has to say is this Thursday he's having his final live webinar of the year. It is completely free. You can sign up for it at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. It's November 16th. 3 p.m. Pacific time, you can learn how Bulwark's risk management strategy is protecting retirement portfolios against loss right Now, space is limited, although it's free, so make sure you sign up. I think they still have some spots left right now, so we're 3 days out. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. All right, dipping outside of Washington State. So APAC is happening down in California, the Asian-Pacific Economic Cooperation Conference, and it includes a visit from the Chinese president in town, Xi Jinping. But something familiar happened before the Chinese president made his visit. San Francisco, arguably one of the most destroyed cities in the entire country, suddenly looked just brand spanking new. They cleaned up the homeless tents. They painted walls. They were out pressure washing sidewalks. They even put up some hostile architecture to try to stop the homeless tents from coming back. There's this row where there had been some before videos of just tents and people using drugs, and they installed hundreds of these planters so people wouldn't come back and put tents. It reminds me so much of what happened before the MLB All-Star Game in Seattle, where they were out south of the stadiums and they were clearing out all the RVs and the tents, and then they were coming in with these big concrete barriers. You had groups going up, cleaning everything in sight, and all of a sudden Seattle looked like a brand new city, because these cities, they know that that doesn't look good. They can find the political will when it's important that they do so. They don't care about the rest of us, whether we have to live with that in Seattle, whether we have to live with that in San Francisco. They don't care about the businesses who are dealing with that out every single day. They just care about how it's going to make their cities look on the world stage. And I don't know if that could ever be more clear. What other reason would there be for it? That you didn't want, you know, Xi Jinping to be like, wow, it's dirty here. It's much better in China. Now, the difference between what Seattle did for the MLB All-Star Game and what California and San Francisco did for APEC is that, at least down in San Francisco, they were honest about what they did.
Folks say, oh, they're just cleaning up this place because all those fancy leaders are coming into town. That's true, because it's true. But it's also true, for months and months and months prior to APEC, we've been having different conversations.
I mean,
it's true because it's true.
That's true. Because it's true. I kind of give Gavin Newsom credit for that. Because in Seattle, they denied it. Bruce Harrell denied it. I mean, they were like, okay, yeah, there's some beautification happening or whatever. But they denied that any of the homeless camp sweeps were specific to the MLB All-Star Game. They're like, no, we've been doing this. We had this plan. And Gavin Newsom gives the caveat, it's true. Except we've been having different conversations. And I will say, in San Francisco, the mayor there has turned a corner in terms of, okay, we need to clean things up. We can't allow this to be as it is. So we've given her on this show some credit. I give Gavin Newsom credit for saying it. However, the fact that you've been having different conversations for months on end, but then you only act on those conversations right before a bunch of political people from across the world come into town is very telling. If you want to do it, you can do it. Seattle has shown that. San Francisco has shown that. When do they find the motivation to do it? Only when it looks good for them. And that's just very clear. All right, really quick update on the presidential race. Tim Scott suspended his campaign. I like Tim Scott. I thought Tim Scott was a very reasonable... I mean, I knew he wasn't going to win, right? South Carolina senator. But I thought he did a really good job at articulating policy positions, being specific about policy positions. It's something we talked about after the Miami debate last week. I wish politicians like him could do better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that he has got a good shot at VP.
Yeah, I think maybe he could be VP, certainly. And he managed to run a campaign without, like, vilifying any of the front runners to a certain extent.
Just a nice guy.
Seems like a nice guy. But I just wish someone like him could do better than someone like Trump. That's my opinion.
I feel like everybody wishes that, yes. Well, no, I guess not everybody.
The only option for Republicans to not lose, although there's been some polling out that it says that Trump would beat Biden although there's polls go back and forth, but some on the left are freaking out about this.
Say they'll, that he'll be, but I don't trust polls anymore.
I don't either. Absolutely don't trust polls. However, I really don't think it's going to be Biden. I think it's going to be Gavin Newsom, right? I think Nikki Haley's the only chance at this point for Republicans. I think she's the only chance because she's a woman. She's a little more disarming.
Mm-hmm.
And this fear that people have over, MAGA Republican extremists, I feel like she's the only one who could defuse it.
I agree with you. I don't think we are at a place in society right now where somebody's going to walk away from Trump and go that route. I think that they've already decided if it's not Trump, it's DeSantis, and that's the way it is. And then I think VP will go between Scott and Haley. But I wish that we were at a place in society where we could be like, okay, you know what? It's not looking too good for those two guys. Right. So we'll go to the winner. The one that could maybe win. But that's not how we roll here. I don't get it.
It's like, you know, the more people protest over Trump and say Trump's not the guy, the more there's just ingrained. It's like, nope, that's the one.
Fires him up. It's depressing. I don't know what to do.
2024, if Trump's on the ticket, it's going to be so depressing in Washington State. It's going to be straight L's for all the Republicans. You do know that, right? Anyway. okay, one more. Actually, let's skip over this.
Like we're detached these days. I don't know.
Let's skip over this Vox story. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and then we'll get into comments. If you're thinking about selling your home first, you see how I just seamlessly transition into our advertisers? If you're thinking about selling your home, it's really important in this market to make sure that you choose an experienced real estate agent. There are a lot of real estate agents out there, but you want to choose one who has been there through all the ups and downs in the market, who's going to give you honest advice. Our friend Wes Jones has been doing this for a really long time in this area, King, Snohomish, North Pierce County. He was talking the other day on the show about, you know, the state of the economy. And obviously, you can't fool yourself and think that this is the best market ever to put your home on sale. But he said that they have seen home prices going up despite what's happening economically.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's actually going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah. So if you need to put your home on the market, it might not be a bad time. The key is though, the first thing Wes is going to do, if you go to sellwithwes.com, he's going to do a free market analysis for you. So you have all the information you need to decide whether your home is going to be well positioned to hit the market. So sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, getting into questions and comments. Somebody asked if we're both going to a funeral later. Hey, it fits the mood of my soul. We're both in like all black today. We always wear all black.
We do wear
I feel like
black.
More days than not, we're in all black. All right, let's see. On the election results, Anne commented on Measure One winning in Tacoma. Now landlords can add 2 months of expenses to their deposit. They don't look at the end result. It's ridiculous to say that if you raise rent 5% as a landlord, you have to pay for someone to move somewhere else for 2 months. What small landlord is going do that?
I've already heard from a few people saying that they're selling their rentals. They're 100% out.
You know, speaking of Wes, we scheduled time for Wes to come in to talk about that very issue because you know who he's seeing put their home on the market? Working with him? Landlords.
Right.
Who are like, hey, Wes, I got to sell my home because it's a rental property and I'm not staying in Seattle. I'm not staying in Tacoma. So
why would you?
Another commercial for Wes Jones. If you need to sell your rental property, sellwithwes.com. All right. Linda says, such a surprise that late ballots save them every time. Look.
It's exactly why people get, lose their
progressives
trust.
Do it better. Mm-hmm. Progressives and Democrats, they ballot harvest better. They go out. They get out the vote better. Mm-hmm. They're out at freaking homeless camps registering people to vote. That does happen, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there making sure they have tents, making sure people can same day up on Capitol Hill, up in all the areas where they know that they have a higher concentration of people who are going to vote for them. if Republicans just have to get it together. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not doing more. Jim Walsh talked about some of that, about getting involved mm-hmm. in ballot harvesting, because that's been sort of taboo for Republicans for a long time. But it's legal in Washington state. And if the other side is doing it, yeah. you sure as hell better be doing it, too.
Yep.
So they need to do everything except, you know, I don't want them to employ the same tactics as Democrats. I don't want them to win by employing the same fear-mongering tactics.
I agree.
That's what really bothers me. But at the same time, it's like, well, Democrats aren't going to stop doing it. They're going to keep winning on this mega Trump. What's the equivalent of that for Republicans?
As you've been saying, we need to start commenting against it. So
right.
when it said somebody else other than us, call it out.
And the part, they need to be punished for doing that. And I'm not saying like punished in some sort of official way, but they need to lose a high profile campaign because yeah. of how the campaign was run. And until that happens, they're not going to stop.
Maybe they should be punished in a defamation suit or something along those lines.
We're just very litigious ridiculous. Lately. Yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know what it's going to take. Brett says, I can't believe Spokane. WTF. You think it's bad here now? Wait until Dems sink their teeth in. I really truly can't believe that either.
Ugh.
Because, I mean, Spokane, you know, they had Proposition 1 in Spokane where an overwhelming thing like 76% of people
I don't think it ended up at that.
We can check.
Yeah.
We can click and check. Maybe I think it was still pretty high, but maybe not 76. But overwhelming majority of people said that they want to make it illegal for camps and tents and homeless things to be where kids are, like by parks and stuff like that. That tells me that you have a common sense, you know, electorate that realizes that something like that is deeply, deeply ridiculous. But then they're going to vote in Lisa Brown? I mean, that makes no sense. Surely Nadine Woodward's appearance with Matt Shea, you know, the right-wing extremist, didn't cost her that many votes.
It did. It was 75 to 25, but it's odd because the numbers seem very, like, less people voted for that than they did Spokane mayor, so that's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, but it doesn't make any sense to me. The Spokane race is weird. And maybe, again, I'll have to talk to, let's follow up with Jim Walsh.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Jim Walsh about what Republicans did or did not do for Nadine Woodward. I want to talk to him about what they did or did not do for Sheriff Fortney. I got some questions. Jim, if you're watching, we're going to call you. All right. Phil Comstock says, what happened in Snohomish County is similar to Olympia school board races. Incumbent Maria Flores referred to other candidates of being far right wing, intent on bringing homophobic racist practices to the district with absolutely no evidence. She referred to one candidate as spreading hate speech, again, with no evidence. Yeah, they vilified Frank Durocher mm-hmm. because he was at an event where I was collecting signatures to repeal 5599 and painted him as a transphobe. So it's like, you know what? People will accept that level of fear-mongering when it benefits them, but wait till it comes for you.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till it comes for you. I think that's why you're starting to see people like Democrats like Congresswoman Kim Schreier, Congressman Adam Smith, who was on our show the other day, more moderate Democrats. I think that's why you're starting to see them get a little more brave in speaking out against that far left fringe, because the far left fringe is going to come for them. Adam Smith was already primaried last election mm-hmm. cycle by an extremist. You know, he knows that's going to happen again. And then it's only a matter of time before some progressive, uber progressive challenges Kim Schreier in the 8th. And so I don't think that hopefully they're seeing that and they're going to realize that it's better for them to speak out against that fringe well before that fringe comes for their jobs. All right, Lieutenant Dan. Was it Lieutenant Dan that was in the hospital?
Yes, I believe so.
Lieutenant Dan, will you tell us how you're doing? Are you out of the hospital yet? We're very worried about you. He says, sadly, a lot of people only pay attention to headlines and character assassinations rather than the track record of someone's term. I can only hope Johnson will keep us safe, but I'm doubtful. David said, Adam Fortney has been the best sheriff in my lifetime. I think he's been a pretty darn good one. Yeah. And you know what? There was this whole thing about the other sheriffs, five of the previous five sheriffs who endorsed his opponent. It's because he didn't kiss the ring. Mm-hmm. It's because he challenged his boss. He didn't kiss the ring on the way up. Didn't follow the course of what he was supposed to do and stay in his place. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like him for it.
I mean,
I really believe that's why.
I live in Everett. I've talked to business owners in Snohomish County, and everything has gotten better based on some of the stuff that he's been doing. And I mean, the proof will be in the pudding. If it all comes back, and I will tell you, I will come in here immediately and be like, guess what's back on my block? Because
yes.
It has been cleaned up significantly, and I've seen people that are seemingly getting help or at least, you know, finding some place to hang out other than outside on the street corners. And I mean, if she brings this back, I'm going to be so angry.
You're going to be our correspondent, so our Everett mad. Correspondent.
Yeah. The businesses around me that were having rocks thrown at their windows and the car windshields and things like that. If that comes back, because that has been better and people have been telling me that's better. And if that comes back, oh.
Nicole's going to be out there all vigilante justice. I'm a little worried at your level of anger. Holy moly. We have a lot of comments today on so many different things. Okay, hold on. All right. On our trifecta of unbelievable segments, Tracy says you're going to have to change the name of the podcast to Unbelievable. Yeah, that's true. On Inslee not being willing to talk to King Five about his missing climate goals, but being willing to talk to everyone else about his climate agenda, country guy, you little people get so easily confused. We have to keep it simple for you. Numbers in particular are confusing. That's why we don't teach math anymore. Again, is that not every time the state is criticized for hiding something, they say they do it. Because it would confuse us.
Right.
We're just dum-dums. But we're just so stupid.
He is spending money on this department that he's created.
He did it.
Just to bring us the info, and they're not bringing the info.
Because the info
because
isn't.
Because it might be confusing.
No. Well, yeah, that's what they said. Because the info isn't what he hoped it would be.
Right.
Because so they're not doing right. as well as they hoped. So right. this whole agency.
Well, we know that, but.
He created.
Mm-hmm.
When he first got elected, to keep himself honest.
Right.
Has turned into an utterly dishonest shill for Governor Inslee. Shock of the century.
So explain to us why we're spending the money on that agency now.
Yeah, Andy Stevens makes a good point. Seeing King Five hit Inslee twice in a week was not on my bingo card. Love to see it. Yeah. I will give him credit.
Yeah.
You know that I criticize the mainstream media a lot and what some of my friends call woke Five News.
Mm-hmm. But the investigators who have been there and have been, I mean, they've been putting out content like this. It just takes a while. These are big investigations. So yes, when they put out their stuff, it's pretty good. Good.
Yeah. Jethro McButterpants on the TA at USC, who's the daughter of the Redmond mayor. Do these missing persons flyers from this tragedy really need to be posted in the school in the first place? And that's something that we could debate. Like, sure. But, you know, that's on one of those boards where it's like, hey, you need a dog walker? Take a thing. Like, people can post whatever. So if you limit what people can post on those little public
Well, and
boards.
It was also her giggling and laughing about him saying or explaining what she was doing and not saying, hey, I just think that it should be for babysitting and dog walking.
Yeah.
But that's not what she was implying.
But also, like I said, and there was actually an example of this. If you want to post something next to it mm-hmm. that has your opinion on what's happening in the Middle East, mm-hmm. free speech, by all means. Somebody posted a flyer there. If you really feel like you need to combat it, don't tear it down. Put something up next to it. And I saw an example of that. Someone was tweeting out something in New York, and they were all mad about it. And I was like, why would you be mad about that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might disagree with it, but at least they didn't tear your flyer down to put their opinion up next to it, which is how it should be. So why do you need to tear down the missing person flyers? What does that do? On San Francisco, cleaning up, spraying down. I wonder where that water goes that they spray that down. Does that get treated in some facility somewhere?
The poor fishies. The just poor like fish our poor fishies.
Those fish in San Francisco are blasted high right now.
My water doesn't look clean there either.
Leland with a $5 super chat. Regarding San Francisco, you know how you clean up and spruce up your house just before you sell it? Yeah. Let me see here. Skip says, I subscribed, but I don't know where to go look. Old guys shouldn't have computers. Have a great day.
Want to say thank you for subscribing.
Thank you for subscribing. I don't know if you subscribed on Patreon or Locals, but you should be able to just go back there.
I know. I'm confused at what he's wondering.
What are you trying to find,
like
Skip? Tell us.
The subscription page. Okay. That's where you look.
I love it. We'll figure it out. We'll help you. You just send us a message. Go to undividedpod.com. Click on the contact us. It'll go right to Nicole and I. We'll help you out. Thank you for subscribing. Right. All right. A lot of questions and comments today. Mm-hmm. Do we have any more super chats I missed? Are we good?
I think that's
okay.
Awesome.
All right. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Yet another example of just blatant racism, but the good kind of racism. And of course, by good kind, I mean the kind that's acceptable in Seattle, and that is racism against white people. So there is an effort going on right now. It's called Black Friday. Black Friday, right? Nicole, do you have the website?
That's correct. Oh, yeah, you want it?
Yeah, I said it twice, hoping that you'd put it up. but you were just sitting there, and I didn't know how else to cue you that I wanted the website that said Black Friday. So anyway, some Seattle agencies have created a first ever Black Friday card to support Black businesses. The goal, they say, is to generate a minimum of $250,000 in revenue for local Black-owned businesses during the holiday season. They said in a press release, Black-owned businesses are vastly underrepresented in the Puget Sound area as compared to the population, and they have significantly larger challenges succeeding, said Alan Brown, founder of DNA. As one of the only Black and LGBTQ plus owned agencies in the country with a mission to bring equity to our communities, we want to do everything we can to help Black owned businesses thrive. That means raising awareness of these businesses and driving real revenue on the biggest shopping day of the year and throughout the holiday season. Using our creative talent and collaborating with our media and community partners, BECU and PCC Markets, we've been able to bring nearly $1 million in media support and messaging access to millions of residents in the Pacific Northwest. Okay. This is just racist. When are we going to get to the point where, can you imagine? So here's the headline. This is insane. Here is the headline from Cairo 7. Seattle agencies create first ever Black Friday card to support Black businesses. The goal is to generate a minimum of $250,000 in revenue for local Black-owned businesses. Can you imagine if this said, Seattle agencies create the first ever white Black Friday, and the goal is to generate a minimum of $250,000 in revenue for local white-owned businesses. That's the test of whether something's racist. You just replace one skin color with another skin color, and you ask yourself, if you read it that way, if people would consider it racist. And if the answer is yes, then you simply don't do it. Also, have you ever in your life shopped somewhere specifically because of the skin color of the people who own the business? I know the answer for me is no, because that would be simply insane. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Nicole really hit that soon. She wants me to be done. She's like, Brandy, the show's running late.
Hey.
Wrap it up, lady.
Gotta get back to work.
UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. You can support our mission and our movement for just $5 a month. $5 a month. You can help your locally owned, white-owned podcast. Is that acceptable? No, it's not.
No.
That it would be racist, too. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.